folks. Let's go ahead and get back to work. Thank you all for your incredible patience. We're first of all, I'll let Carla read items 6-8, please.
Direct Bureau of Emergency Management, Bureau of Development Services, and Prosper Portland to develop unreinforced masonry building mandatory retrofit implementation steps and return to Council for adoption within 1 year.
And I want to start by thanking everybody for their patience and their understanding. This was a time-certain item that should have happened over almost 2 hours ago now, and sometimes we just cannot accurately judge how many people are going to want to come and testify on items. So thank you very, very much. I personally appreciate your patience. We're here today to again discuss unreinforced masonry building mandatory seismic retrofitting requirements. A little over a month ago, we heard what I believed was a very compelling presentation from the Bureau of Emergency Management outlining seismic risks and the risks that unreinforced masonry buildings posed. We didn't hear any disagreement on that issue. Everybody in the room started with the baseline that whether we agree or disagree with the policies, we all want to do what is in the best interest of the safety of the community. We heard from numerous building owners who discussed concerns, particularly around the financial burden of mandated seismic retrofits. I have continued to receive testimony both in support of implementing mandatory seismic retrofits and against implementing those mandates. My colleagues and I proposed several amendments that we're going to discuss today, and I hope that we're able to come to a conclusion that will take steps in the right direction that both keeps people safe in the event of an earthquake, but which do not pose an undue financial burden, particularly on small building owners and operators. We will review the resolution. We will then review the amendments that were introduced at the previous reading. Then we will also hear some new amendments that will be proposed today. We will take votes on the previously proposed amendments that have already had testimony, and at the very end of the meeting, we will then take the votes on the new ones after we have heard public testimony on those new amendments that are being proposed. To be clear, today we are offering oral testimony, but only on new amendments that are proposed today. We have already taken public testimony on the items that have been previously introduced. We'll then call for a vote on the resolution. And with that, I'd like to call up, she's already here, Jonna Papa F. Themiou, to give us a summary of the resolution before the council and run through each amendment once again. And okay. I promise you someday your name will roll off my tongue like fine music.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon. For the record, I am Jonna Papa F. Themiou, Planning and Resilience Manager at the Bureau of Emergency Management. I'd like to just very briefly review the original URM resolution and then walk through the amendments that have already been introduced and where I think there is probably consensus. So the resolution directs staff to implement the recommendations of the Unreinforced Masonry Building Policy Committee with respect to mandatory retrofits. That includes strengthening the existing code to make it more difficult to phase a project in a way that avoids doing seismic upgrades when you're doing other major work. To be clear, this doesn't change the actual standards. But it does also direct staff to write new code to require seismic retrofits. Says that critical buildings like fire stations, of which there are six critical URMs in the city, need to achieve immediate occupancy within 10 years so that they could be used immediately after an earthquake as a part of emergency response. It also says that schools and public assembly spaces like parks, community centers, which we know are important to the community during recovery, would be required to achieve a damage control standard within 20 years. And that means we could expect to repair and use them again in the weeks to months after an earthquake. Most commercial buildings, this is 85% of URMs fall into this category, would be required to achieve a collapse risk reduction standard. This would, to be clear, not guarantee that they would not collapse, but it would make it much less likely. It would require the owners to brace the parapets, tie the roof to the walls, and strengthen the roof diaphragm within 10 years. And then for those a little less than half of the buildings that are more than one story tall, tie the walls to the floors. And then finally, for those small URM buildings, of which there are about 200 in the city, the picnic shelters and auto garages, it would require them to brace the parapets within the next 10 years, which is complying with the current code. The original resolution also directs staff to come back to council with a suite of financial supports for property owners, including a property tax exemption that could offset the cost of the retrofit, a proposal to capitalize and administer a revolving loan fund or something similar like an interest rate buy-down program or a grant program, a program of staff assistance to help URM property owners navigate both the financing and the permitting portions of the retrofit process, and then finally a legislative agenda to support state tax credits that promote seismic retrofitting. The resolution also directs staff to assess city-owned URM buildings and the steps necessary to retrofit them. And then finally, as a staff recommendation not from the committee, it directs city staff to develop ordinances that would require placarding of non-residential URM buildings, and it would require URM building owners to disclose to their renters that the building is an unreinforced masonry building.
If I'm
non-residential.
Yes. The original recommendation is for non-residential only.
Okay. My amendment would include residential.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
And if somebody had asked me last night if I could show what the placarding will look like, this is the placarding, and it says this is an unreinforced masonry building. Unreinforced masonry buildings may be unsafe in the event of a major earthquake. I believe it was Pastor Mondini who asked. I can't remember who asked. I didn't have the exact language.
Great.
Thank you.
So that's the original resolution. There are amendments.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, no, that's fine.
I wasn't listening.
No. The first amendment, which is shown in the matrix that I believe commissioners have in front of them, it's labeled Fish 1, and it provides additional context in the whereas section of the resolution, so it doesn't require any additional action, but it's shown right here and in your table as Fish 1.
It's my intention we're going to vote on these previously discussed items as we come to them. So
okay.
Is there any further discussion on fish number one? Carla, please call the roll.
And so who seconded it?
You, Daly.
Thank you. Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
You, Daly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. Obviously, maintaining affordable housing is critical. It's also important that we don't compromise either safety while taking into account the question of affordability, and this does that. So I vote aye. The amendment is adopted.
Great.
And then, Commissioner Fritz, I believe you also made some changes to your amendment, which is position number two here on the matrix.
Yes, Mayor, I've just refined the language, which I hope is okay with Commissioner Udaly, who seconded it. It would now say, be it further resolved that the Office of Management and Finance, in collaboration with the City Budget Office, will develop a financial plan within a year to bring all city-owned Class 1 and Class 2 unreinforced masonry buildings into compliance with the adopted mandatory seismic retrofitting standards based on the assessed costs to retrofit and...
Commissioner Udaly, are you okay with that as the seconder? Very good. Any further discussion on this item? Carla, please call the roll.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
And many of the Class 1 and Class 2 are the ones that the city or public entities own, and these are the ones that we absolutely want to stay standing after the big ones. So it's essential that the city figures out how to literally put its own house in order and have community centers and other places that are going to be available after the big one. Aye.
Aye. The amendment's adopted.
Great. So moving to the third amendment in the matrix, which was proposed by Mayor Wheeler, if you look at the retrofit requirements that are originally, what it does is extend the timeline from 10 and 15 to 20 years for all the upgrades. It, at least for now, eliminates the requirement for the wall-to-floor ties, and then it adds a resolution to form another committee.
Very good. Any further discussion?
Yeah, could
Commissioner
I speak to
Fritz?
This, please? One of the most compelling pieces of testimony that we received is from the Oregon State Seismic Safety Policy Advisory Commission. The chair, Jay Raskin, sent us two letters. And he said, I propose that the council pass the Class 1 and Class 2 recommendations and delay implementation of Class 3 pending further study. The delay in Class 3 implementation will also allow time for the city to re-examine the incentive aspects of the URM seismic upgrades. There is a real danger in adopting substandard seismic upgrade recommendations for URMs, since it will foster a false sense of security where building owners and the public believe that these buildings are safer than they are. So my recommendation is that we do the Class 1 and Class 2 and go to the committee to do further work on the Class 3 and Class 4, rather than adopt saying that we're definitely going to adopt it in the next, even with the changed timelines. And not including the floor ties.
So, Mayor, may I be heard on this?
Please, Commissioner Fish.
So, I think Commissioner Fritz raises a concern that I've had, notwithstanding that I think the urgent life safety issues here. I feel like with respect to Class 3 and Class 4 buildings, we've put the cart before the horse. However, because of the two amendments that the mayor intends to offer, Wheeler 2 and 3, which we're going to vote on, I actually think it has the effect of accomplishing the goal that Commissioner Fritz and I share, because it, in effect, defers for 1 year any code writing. And instead directs a committee to come up with various options for financing any of the potential mandates under consideration, and still leaves it to the council at the end of that 1 year period to direct future action. So because of the mayor's amendments 2 and 3, I'm actually comfortable supporting Wheeler 1 because we have he's in effect modifying his proposal.
That is correct, Commissioner Fish. These are to work in tandem, and the effect of this amendment plus the second amendment that is Wheeler 2, that would basically say there is no mandate until there is the opportunity to actually identify a specific source of funding. And I'll explain my last amendment, which I'm introducing today, when we get to that point.
May I be heard?
Commissioner Fritz.
In that case, then, I believe we need to delete your the second be it further resolved in Wheeler 1, because it says right there, be it further resolved that the City Council directs the staff to develop the code language, and it mandates the Class 3 and 4.
They are developing the code language, but it's my understanding they will not implement that code language till they come back to the City Council.
No, we couldn't do that.
The reason, again, and the reason, Commissioner Fritz, that I'm prepared to withdraw Fish 2 is that under Wheeler 2 and Wheeler 3 amendments, it requires a working group to come up with viable financing options for Class 3 and Class 4 property owners. It requires a work session at which council is briefed on those options, and then still requires council affirmative action to move forward with any changes in code. And I believe that is the insurance policy that you and I were seeking when we both identified a concern about putting the cart before the horse.
And it still says, Commissioner, except not including wall floor ties, it still says that they have 20 years to perform the described retrofits. It seems to me that's still putting the cart before the horse. That's not addressed in the later amendments.
Could I get a staff opinion on this, please?
So basically, the requirements that are there are in current code, which is the bracing of the parapets and attaching the walls to the roof.
Right. So that's not changing, except that we're strengthening the code so it's clear what it means.
Right. But the only difference that is being made is that the current code requires that change be made only when the re-roof is done. What this does is it mandates that it be done within the 20-year time frame.
Correct. So, and that is current code.
Yeah, that's current code.
So
this is a Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, I guess I'm trying to pick up here, just trying to understand. I'm concerned about us stating that we will not have any strengthen the seismic code unless we figure out a way to pay for it. I don't think that's how you do life safety rules. You know, it's nice, but it's not necessary. It's not an obligation of the city to figure out how to pay for something if it is in the realm of life safety. And, you know, we have Portland Fire and Rescue personnel here who can talk about a lot of rules that if we had to figure out a way to pay for them, like checking fire escapes, to make sure fire escapes can actually hold the amount of weight they're going to go. If we had to pay for that, we probably wouldn't promulgate that rule. Same thing with requiring smoke detectors and sprinklers in existing nightclubs. So I'm just trying to understand here. Are we, amidst the Wheeler 1 and 2 amendments, are we somehow stating that, that we will not promulgate stricter rules unless we figure out a way to pay for them first?
So I'll answer that. And, you know, again, life safety is critically important, and we are up against a statistical event that will happen at some point in the future of this city. We've heard lots of testimony, particularly from small building owners, that see a financial hardship, and they'd like us to work with them to address that hardship, and that could include working together during the next legislative session on specific financial remedies for those small building owners. It would come back to the City Council within a year for the recommendations, and the City Council, as per always, reserves the right to act at that time. If they feel that people have just blown the conversation off, aren't taking it seriously, haven't found viable solutions, or are not seeking them, we always reserve the right to write that code. My thinking around this has been, you know, we all acknowledge the life safety issue. We agree there is a degree of certainty to this issue. But between now and 12 months from now, statistically, there's no increased risk to this community, but there is a real financial risk to small building owners and operators, and I think we can be thoughtful about this over the course of the next year and have them do their work, work collectively with our staff, work with our legislative leadership and the governor, and come up with a solution not just for Portland's unreinforced masonry, but hopefully for the entire state's unreinforced masonry, and then bring it back to the council. And hopefully there will be some, you know, my expectation is there'll be some very solid recommendations coming out of that work group, and that we will be able to take action on them at that time.
Okay. I guess that's all well and good, and, you know, I hope for the same outcome. I just want to make sure that nothing in here says the council will not move forward unless that's all figured out, necessarily. Well, I mean, they always have the option not to move forward, but correct. I don't want it saying language ahead of time that we have to figure out a strategy to pay for it or we won't do it.
Mayor, may I be heard?
Commissioner Fish.
So because it's a long day and because we have half the clergy in the state of Oregon here, I think we have to first say amen. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Thank you very much. And this is a very complicated issue, and there's some new faces here. So if I could, Mayor, at the risk of oversimplifying, just provide a roadmap.
Yes, sir.
So Commissioner Saltzman, who is in charge of the Fire Bureau, has put down a marker, and it is, I think it's fair to say, he has taken a position on life safety issues that he thinks should be prioritized, that are paramount, and he has also raised a concern that he does not think we should wait to have all the ducks lined up in terms of funding and other details worked out, because he thinks there's a compelling public safety issue. And I'm not speaking for him, but I'm just, and that is consistent with a view he has taken in other debates. And so that is one end of the spectrum. And we're going to get a chance to vote on an amendment that Commissioner Saltzman has offered, which would tighten the timeline for compliance. A couple of us, and that would include, I think it's fair to say, me, Commissioners Udaly and Fritz, have raised concerns about unintended consequences of putting a mandate on Class 3 and 4 buildings. And let's be clear, Class 1 and 2 buildings have basically been resolved. Those are larger institutional buildings. There's still a question of how you pay for it, but they have different capacities to pay. School districts have different capacities to pay for upgrades than a mom-and-pop building owner. So we're talking about Class 3 and Class 4, and the three of us have raised concerns, just to put it use the terrible cliche, putting the cart before the horse until we have mechanisms for softening the financial blow. And part of that is guided by what we've seen in Seattle. And the Seattle experience was, until those issues were resolved, the council there did not feel comfortable putting a mandate on. What the mayor has done, and again, I'm not speaking for him, I'm just trying to simplify this, is the mayor has had negotiations with a number of concerned parties. And in my view, he has come in with a workable compromise that I can support as being one of these folks who is concerned about mandates without the dollars, because I think that just leads to demolitions and to unfavorable transactions in the marketplace. The mayor has come up with a couple of amendments which I think strike the balance in the middle. And my guess is that we're going to have a couple of contested votes on these amendments, because you've got people on the wings and you've got the mayor trying to center the conversation. That's how I view the package of amendments that are left. And while Commissioner Fritz has identified in Wheeler 1 potential inconsistency with Wheeler 2 and 3, the reason I can support it is that the second be it further resolved, directs staff to develop code language to strengthen triggers in the existing code. That's what we've been talking about. Why has the existing code not gotten us better outcomes? What have property owners been able to do to avoid the obligation when replacing a roof or something to take care of these seismic upfit? So I appreciate that. When we begin to the process of developing code, I'm agnostic on that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, people can start working on code tomorrow. Council will not give the green light to implement that code until we've had a work session and a hearing and something else. So I'm less concerned about the mechanics of developing code. And frankly, Commissioner Fritz, it may be in the process of developing code that you and I learn things about what's practical and what not practical. So I view the mayor's amendments 3 and 4 as the 2 and 3 rather as the insurance policy that I need, that nothing will happen until council has had a full briefing from the committees.
Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. That's very helpful, Commissioner Fish. And I also note for everybody and for myself, this is a resolution. It's not binding city policy. It directs what's going to happen over the next year or more. So with that, I'm more comfortable with proceeding as has just been outlined.
Very good. I was waiting to see, was I a reasonable center or was I roadkill? So thank you, Commissioner Fish.
No, I think you did an admirable job finding the center, Mayor.
Yeah, good. Thank you. So very good. Please call the roll. Wheeler 1.
Wheeler 1.
Position 3 on the matrix.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Daly.
Aye.
Fritz.
I'm voting aye with the proviso that I hope Wheeler 2 and 3 pass. Aye.
Wheeler.
I should structure these things like this more often. I vote aye. The amendment passes.
I can move to reconsider, Matt.
No, please don't. Review fish number 3, please, Jonna.
Wonderful. This is the last amendment I have on the slides, and it adds a resolution simply to shape the committee and clarify, even though this committee may be formed before the boards and commission reforms are fully adopted or fully implemented, we won't move forward until the committee is able to fully participate in these. And also to disclose conflict of interest.
Very good. And just to be clear, that's position 4 on the matrix that
yes,
we're referring
thanks.
To. Very good. Any further discussion? Please call the roll. Carla?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. Thank you.
Mayor, at this point, I am formally moving to withdraw Fish 2, which was my amendment that I offered last time, which simply took Class 3 and 4 buildings off the table altogether. And I'm doing so in anticipation of an opportunity to vote on Wheeler 2 and 3.
Very good. Commissioner Fish, number 2, that's position 5 on the matrix, is withdrawn without objection. Now we'll move on to our next amendment moved by Commissioner Saltzman, and that is position number 6 on the matrix. Is there any further discussion? Item number 6.
Yeah, well, so my amendment, for those of you who weren't here last time, requires that the wall-to-floor ties occur within a 15-year time horizon rather than 20 years. And I realize why I just voted for Wheeler 1, which does state 20 years. You know, my heart of hearts wants to support the work of the committee that we had impaneled for about a four-year period that looked at this, and this committee had representatives of apartment owners, the churches, the clergy. I believe they spent a long time looking at this, and that their recommendation for a 15-year timeline on tying the walls to the floors, which is one of the most important measures of ways of preserving a building and giving people an opportunity to get out or not have the building necessarily collapse around them, is a timeline that we should not, frankly, delay. My problem with 20 years is 20 years is so far over the horizon that I don't believe people take it seriously, and that nobody will work on coming up with good options to retrofit their buildings if they're told it's a 20-year requirement, because they're going to say, hey, you know, I'm going to retire. I'll pass this on to my kids. Let them deal with it. We're all going to be gone, and it's going to be a new council that's going to have to wrestle with these issues once again. And, you know, God help us, there's not a major earthquake that happens in those 20 years. Because if there is, that will certainly change the debate dramatically. We would probably pass something overnight more stringent than what we're considering right now. So I think my amendment to accommodate the walls to floor ties within 15 years is actually a reasonable compromise between where we'd be if a tragedy struck today or tomorrow and where the proposals are right now, which is 20 years, which is too far over the horizon to be taken seriously by anybody who's really in these chambers or following this debate right now. It's another issue for another generation. And I would argue, you know, we're trying to protect another generation here. So I still offer my amendment to require 15 years for the wall floor ties.
It's been moved and seconded. I call the amendment.
Could I speak to the...
Commissioner Fritz?
Again, this is a resolution that's directing more work. And so I'm comfortable. I think we should not do something that doesn't work. And so having the wall to floor connections back on the table, we can discuss the timeline. It doesn't have to be this. This is a non-binding resolution. What will matter is when the code is adopted. And so there will be a process that will engage people who feel like they haven't been engaged before to discuss whether or not to do this. So this is not a final decision.
Very good. Further discussion? Call the roll.
Fish?
I have great respect for my colleague and his concern for these issues, but I respectfully disagree with this amendment. I vote no.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
No.
Fritz?
Aye.
Wheeler?
No. The amendment fails. Now we're getting to the new amendments that are being put on the table. Commissioner Saltzman, it's my understanding you have a new one you'd like to put on the table, and it's under position 7 on the matrix.
Yes, this amendment, thank you, Mayor, will require that unreinforced masonry buildings have a placard, and there be a requirement on the owner to notify tenants that this building is, as the placard would say, as Mayor Whaley just showed, this is an unreinforced masonry building. Unreinforced masonry buildings may be unsafe in the event of a major earthquake. We follow this amendment has developed as closely as possible following language that exists in San Francisco and other California cities. And actually, I think we toned it down a little bit from what San Francisco says. And the reason I'm asking this is that I think that with requirements being out there in the distance, there's a long period, 10, 20 years, where we're going to not have buildings that are up to seismic snuff. And there's an obligation upon us who lead the city to give tenants the right to know, their tenants the right to make an informed decision about where they live or where they choose to work. And this placarding and the tenant notification language does exactly that. And I don't think that, you know, it's really who can be against giving more information to tenants to make informed decisions? I mean, I think that's what a lot of this whole economy is based on, is making sure people are informed of the decisions they make and have as much information. And they have a right to know as much information as possible. We have this information. We have an obligation to make sure it's disclosed to people. And it's really, as I like to think about it, with, you know, new requirements now being probably, you know, 20 years away, This is an obligation to our 10-year-olds. This is an obligation to the generation not at the table in these discussions. And these 10-year-olds in 10, 20 years are going to be living and working, but, you know, living in these unreinforced masonry buildings. We have an obligation to act today to do our utmost to make sure that they know of the risks they are undertaking when they choose to rent an apartment in an unreinforced masonry building. So I do think this is really something that I would hope my colleagues will support, and I do think it's very important to the health and safety of Portlanders.
So Commissioner Fish has seconded this item. And these are new amendments, so we will leave these open until we've heard testimony on these new items. Colleagues, as mentioned previously, I have an amendment I'd like to move. It's Wheeler number 2, which is position 8 on your matrix. What this does is it continues the work that's been done on this. As you all know, the committee process has already been a very long and a very thorough one, and the charge to a new work group that would be created by this amendment is a very simple one. And the goal is to pair any new code requirements that go beyond the current code with financial incentives that are being proposed. And there is a long list of incentives that have been proposed that people could potentially use as a starting point. And to ensure that participants are fully engaged in working towards a solution, I propose that this group, made up of owners and tenants and others, subject matter experts, will present its findings at a city council work sessions 6 months after their first meeting, after which the council shall hold a hearing to direct any further code development.
Mayor,
do I have a Commissioner Fish?
Your amendment, the final version, says a work session within 1 year of the first working group.
That is actually correct. Yeah, I'm sorry. I did not update my talking points. Thank you for catching
I'll
that,
second
Commissioner
it.
Fish.
I already seconded it, but I don't think anyone heard me.
We'll give that to Commissioner Udaly Commissioner Fish is number 3. Commissioner Udaly.
Yeah, I'm not going to introduce a formal amendment, but I do want to request that committee includes people with financing, insurance, and actuarial experience. Because while we've done a great job with the technical analysis, we haven't done a great job with the financial analysis, and I just... That's what's holding me up on this issue.
I would gladly accept that as a friendly addition to the amendment.
Well, thank you, Mayor.
The more the merrier. What we want to do here is be thorough.
Hopefully, someone can spell actuarial better than I can say it.
It's not easy. I have one additional, and that was seconded, correct, by Commissioner Udaly and Fish. Thank you. I have one additional amendment. Last night, I spoke to a number of the pastors who are in this room today, and they shared with me concerns that they had expressed about their congregations. They were deeply disheartened because they felt they had not been fully heard, that they had not been fully included in this process. And I believe they also made some very good points, which related specifically to nonprofit religious institutions, about how some financing mechanisms are not going to be as appropriate for religious nonprofits. They did express their strong desire to be actively engaged in this process and work alongside other nonprofits and faith institutions to address the needs that are unique to that sector and come back to the city council having done work to the city council. I came away from that conversation at first chagrined, then highly optimistic about the level of interest and engagement and energy that this group would like to put into this effort. And so it struck me as, rather than creating a divisive outcome today, why don't we take them up on that generous offer that they put on the table to create a group, work hard with our staff invite in experts, meet with others in the state who have an interest in this, and let's see if we can build this coalition into something that gives us some powerhouse solutions. Therefore, I propose the additional amendment before you, which is now in position 9 on your matrix. I'm proposing this additional working group to address the particular challenge of nonprofits, including religious nonprofits, and allow them extra time to work with us to propose recommendations to aid them in achieving retrofits that will keep their congregants safe. I propose that they be exempted from seismic retrofits other than those that are already in the code until they work with city staff to strategize obtaining financial incentives particular to religious nonprofits. And they have assured me that they will approach this in a highly active and engaged way. And it is in that spirit, having been convinced that this is the right path forward, that I offer this amendment to my colleagues.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Commissioner Fritz.
Do you need to actually read the language into the record?
Legal counsel, it's on the matrix, so do I need to? I'm happy to read it in. Be delighted. Be it further resolved that the City Council directs city staff to convene a working group comprised of representatives of nonprofits to develop recommendations for standards, financing options, and timelines for a mandatory seismic retrofit program for nonprofits, including but not limited to religious nonprofits and educational nonprofits. Be it further resolved that nonprofit institutions are, that should be exempt, not accept, typo. From all new mandatory retrofit, you knew that, didn't you? You knew that was there. All new mandatory retrofits until this working group presents recommendations to City Council, at which time City Council will reconvene to direct further code development specific to nonprofit institutions. Nonprofit institutions are not exempt from current city code. Do I have a second? Commissioner Fish already seconded. Great. So those... Commissioner Saltzman.
Well, I just want to get an understanding. So the group will be formed. There'll be an effort to find financing. City Council will reconvene and then decide at that time whether further seismic retrofit than the existing code is necessary for churches and nonprofits. Is that
correct?
That's a correct
answer. That is correct.
Okay.
And
so it's not saying we're exempting them forever.
No. Okay. And they, through our conversation last night, certainly heard me that the life safety issue is imperative, but they persuaded me that we could take this extra time and see if there isn't a solution that we have not considered that might be viable.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. So those are there any other amendments that any of my colleagues would like to offer up at this particular time?
So Mayor,
Commissioner Fish.
It's your intention to see if anyone here present today wishes to testify specifically on those three amendments?
Specifically on the new amendments that are offered today that we have not yet voted on.
And they have been offered and seconded, so people can read the tea leaves, so people are free to testify, but it would be on the amendment.
Okay. Yes, and we've had a number of people waiting patiently who would very much like to do that. So I think we are ready for our first testifiers. Carla, how many people do we have signed up?
We have 17, but I'm not sure everybody knew they could sign up to testify. So if you want to testify to the amendments, please come sign up.
So I'm going to have to limit us to 2 minutes each, and the reason is because we're due back for another city council session at 2 p.m., so it's okay if you want to appoint representatives who share your views or stand with them or however you'd prefer it. But let's limit it to 2 minutes. Name for the record. We don't need to know your address. Thank you.
The first three are Ezel Watson, Pastor Mondaine, and Dr. Leroy Haynes. And they'll be followed by Bishop Irving, Pastor Tate, and Dr. Hennessy.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you again for your patience. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much. My name is Ezel Watson. I am a resident of the Park Rose community in Portland. And I would first like to speak in support of Mayor Wheeler's amendments. Councilman Saltzman, you made a really pungent point that we need to give information. We have an obligation to disclose information to our tenants about safety. Well, I took a look at in support of this amendment, I read through the committee's report. The committee's report says that there are, as far as URM buildings, 44 schools, 38 churches, and 248 multifamily structures that impact about 7,000 residential units. If we apply about a 1.5 to ratio to every residential unit, and we say about 25 people are in the churches and 50 people are in these schools, and we compare the language in the resolution currently that says at our public testimony meetings we heard from 200 people. That means we heard from less than 1% of the people that are probably going to be impacted by this policy. I don't think that that is consistent with the Bureau of Development Services mission statement with respect to equity. It says that the Bureau of Development Services is committed to the elimination of racism and discriminatory practices in our services and in our workplace because we understand the positive value of equitable systems. I notice in the committee's report that the nonprofits and church buildings that are impacted and the URMs, over half of them serve underserved communities, historically African American, Chinese, Samoan, and it says Latino, but I'm going to say Latinx. I want to say that I support this because I want you guys to have a better commitment to equity, and I appreciate you bringing this amendment forward.
Thank you for being here. Good morning, sir. Good afternoon.
To Honorable Mayor Ted Wheeler and the distinguished members of the Portland City Council, my name is the Reverend Dr. Leroy Haynes. I come today representing the Urbana Ministerial Alliance, the oldest active alliance of ecumenical churches in the historical Urbana community of the North and Northeast Portland. To Mayor Wheeler and City Commissioner, the African-American community in the city of Portland is feeling right now like they are under a siege from a long historical systematic effort of broken promises, urban renewal, redlining, gentrification, educational assault, economic depravity, disproportionate stops and arrests, lack of available housing, disproportionate shooting and abuse of black citizens by the Portland police, disproportionate access to health services and care displacement. And now we were facing an attack on the heart and the soul of our community, our churches, our faith houses. We fully understand the importance of life-saving issues of the earthquake proofing, but the lack of communication to churches, in particular African-American churches and others, and a lack of steps to ameliorate the special needs of institutions is very troublesome. This critical urgent problem has to be resolved. Therefore, the Urbana Minister Alliance support the effort of Mayor Wheeler and the compromise amendment to take place. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, and thank you for hosting us here today. I applaud your efforts to come out and speak to us last night. It was most gracious. And my whole hope is that the other commissioners would have followed suit and found it necessary to speak to our community. Commissioner Saltzman made an excellent point. He indicated, as my apparatus fails.
Never fails, right?
Never fails. He indicated that the citizens have a right to know we are citizens. To be uninformed is to be disarmed. The African American community is usually, historically, the first to be affected by community ills or social ills or etc., and the last to be informed. To disengage an already marginalized community brings us to a place of uncomfortability, and those places usually foster fear. Fear is something that drives us to places of vivid and wild imaginatory things that might or may not come to haunt us or to harm us. As we engage this new amendment, as we are appreciative of your kindness, it is our hope that in future endeavors that the effort to reach our communities as to sustain good and comfortable relations with you in terms of trust would be most appreciated and wholeheartedly embraced. Thank you so much.
Can I offer just one word of I hope that satisfies a little bit of the pain that you've expressed in terms of communication. This hearing began weeks ago, months ago. I lose track.
Months
ago. And we did hear from a broad range of stakeholders in Class 3 and 4 buildings, including faith communities, including nonprofits, housing providers, the like. And we did have an amendment on the table coming into this hearing, which would have exempted them altogether from any regulation. So I don't want you to feel like there was no listening.
Yes.
What is happening today is we are bringing the two sides together, in my opinion, informed by the conversation you had with the mayor when he got off the plane from Boston and struck an agreement on the Second Amendment.
Yes.
But we did have a framework that had been introduced and seconded that would have exempted Class 3 and Class 4 and would have put us back under the code. So I don't want it to be quite as despairing, but we can always do better communication, sir.
Yes. We did read that this amendment that you speak of did exist, and that I don't think is the problematic matter. What is the issue was that we were not informed.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. Appreciate your being here. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next three people
are Bishop Irving, Pastor Tate, and Dr. Hennessy, and they will be followed by Alonzo Chadwick, Tim Even, and Vic Savara.
Very good.
By the way, that was Pastor E.D. Mondane, who didn't tell you his name for the record, the NAACP president.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for being here.
To the Honorable Ted Wheeler and to the host of council members, we certainly indeed appreciate your ear for this this afternoon. I'm Bishop Marcus Irving, Albina Christian Life Center. We're affiliated with the International Church of God in Cleveland, Tennessee. The scripture in Nehemiah 4:13, therefore said I, in the lower places behind the wall and on the higher places, I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters and your wives and your houses. And it came to pass when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his own work. And we are here representing those who are on the wall. I was present here on May the 9th council meeting, as I sat and listened to all of the professionals presenting their findings and results of their studies to give validity to the seismic retrofitting mandate that sits imminent, staring us in the face. And after learning of that meeting just 3 days prior, I left that meeting feeling devastated, overwhelmed, and violated. I wondered, who is this that seeks to do us harm? Who sits in the voting booth, not truly understanding the immense cost and negative effect of these plans toward our churches and all other businesses and abodes affected by these plans? But today, I'm out of time. I would like to think that we're at an impasse, but I feel we're behind the eight ball rather than an impasse. An impasse would mean or suggest that our being here would cause you to rethink the imposition of these plans due to the enormous impact of this process. The exploding of our churches and those mom-and-pop businesses would do immeasurable, irreparable harm and damage to all involved, especially the faith community that God has ordained to extend his love to all mankind. You, City Council, have a job to do to try and prevent hurt or death in the event of an earthquake Yes, I kind of lost my place there too. Yes. But we just want to say thank you, and I'll have to send you a copy of the rest of my testimony.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thank you, Bishop.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and City Commissioners. First of all, I want to say thank you for showing up last night. You brought us some hope. I want you to know that there were a lot of African-American community people that had a short fuse on yesterday, not understanding, not knowing what's going on. And so by you showing up, it eased some tension. I wanted you to know that.
Thank you.
It's important for you, to commissioners and the mayor, to know we are concerned about safety. Safety is our number one thing. That's why we preach the gospel. It's about being safe. And so we know about safety. Just like I want to be safe when I come to this building. I want to be safe when I drive over the Hawthorne Bridge, the Fremont Bridge. I want to be safe when I go to any city of Portland buildings. When I go to the Lord Center, I want to be safe. And so it's not about that. We're not concerned about safety. The concern is that we want to make sure that our places of worship, places that we have put our sweat and tears and people before us have invested, mortgage their house, put in their tithes, put in their offering, that somehow or another, because we cannot afford to have our houses of worship be earthquake proof, that the city ends up taking over our property. That's a major concern. That's a major concern because we are a 501(c) religious. We cannot afford to spend thousands of dollars. If we did call a contractor in, where are we going to go to have services? Where are we going to go? If we go somewhere, we got to get a permit. It's going to cost us money. Where are we going to go? We're scattered the flock, and that's not what we want to do. I don't think that the commissioners or even you, Mayor, want to go down record that you were the one who caused uproar in the African-American community churches.
Thank you.
Oh, the name is Roy Tate. I'm pastor of Christ Memorial Church.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, members of City Council. My name is J.W. Matt Hennessy, the senior servant of Vancouver Avenue First Baptist Church and also the chair of Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. I come to echo what has already been said by those before me. I'd just like to underscore just a couple of things. Number one, I really appreciate, in fact, the fact that the mayor and Maurice came with us last night, both after a very long flight from Boston. And the fact that they came to visit with us means that they've got secured now seats in heaven. What I also wanted to say is that safety is number one for us, and I pray that you know that's important. Number two, our concern was really about engagement in the process. We want to be as thoughtful and to be as have the access to information to help make good decisions for our community, and we felt that we didn't have that, and we're looking towards this work group to be able to do that. Thirdly, I think it's extremely important that you understand that we come not just for ourselves, but recognize there are people who live in buildings in 3 and 4, who are voiceless, and we want to be able to stand up for them. The fourth is that when it comes to churches or religious organizations, I should say, particularly in the African-American community in Portland, and I'm sorry to say this, but it's true, our banks are not always what we need them to be, and we suffer when it comes to going to banks asking for loans and grants and things of that nature. So we're looking forward to the working group to help us with the state, people like Peter Courtney and others, to really say, how do we do this? How do we make our places safe? And how do we work with you to continue on this march to make our churches, our houses of worship, seismically consistent? So we thank you. And we appreciate you, and we support the amendment.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The next three are Alonzo Chadwick, Tim Even, and Vic Savara. And they will be followed by Paul Daigle, Lindsay Levy, and Robert Hunter.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the time, Mayor and Commissioners. Again, I want to echo thank you for showing up last night. It really was awesome that you made that choice to do that. Last night you asked a question and you said, what do we know? And I think the thing was, it's not about what we know, it's about what we didn't know. And I think that's the key element. This narrative has been recycled for generations, and it's always been said that we were informed or that we were reached out to, and it has never been the case. If we aren't at the table or a part of these committees, then we are not informed. And if this has been on the table for 4 years and you didn't see us here, it's very clear and direct that we are not aware or informed about anything. Historically, this has been the story. It has not changed. And at this point, we are no longer going to accept the responsibility for you all dropping the ball and then expecting us to continue forward, because that is the clearest example of white privilege. We are here. We are not going away. And we not only deserve, but we demand to be at the table. And particularly when it comes to our communities and when we are being impacted, we deserve a right to know what's going on and to be at the table to speak and to be able to make sure our voices are heard. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Commissioner
Just
Fritz.
Put your name into the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Alonzo Chadwick, Minister Alonzo Chadwick, Maranatha Church.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Good afternoon.
Hello. My name is Tim Even. Hello, Mayor and Commissioners. I understand your amendment has a new committee being formed, and I want you to please be sure and double check that your new committee is made up of affected people, affected owners, affected tenants, affected minorities, and also citizens who have no conflict, and none of the committee makeup has the last time where everyone was set to profit or gain in some way. And Mr. Salzman, I really am disappointed that you didn't know that and you misrepresented that earlier in your comment about the prior committee. They were totally biased. They were set up by Steve Novick, who started this whole thing. He handpicked the people. He picked the lady as the chairman that set up the code before. He stacked the deck. Then he had his wife's sister-in-law write an article for the New Yorker and have it published, and then your Bureau of Emergency Management Director, Carmen Merlo, stated the whole reason was this for, was because of the article in the New Yorker. And here it turns out she was involved in writing it too. She goes back to New York to talk about what a great article it was. She lied to us on that. She also lied to us that the building owners were represented on the prior committee. You probably don't know that either. She told us Walt McMoney's was our representative. He has told us he was not a representative. He got locked out today because your meeting ran late and you wouldn't let him.